You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
It's hour one on this Tuesday. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Everybody's here, including Fritzy. You can be part of the program in a variety of ways. You can dial us up. You can also email, if you'd like, 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address, dp at danpatrick.com. Stat of the day brought to you, as always, by Panini America, the official trading cards of the Dan Patrick Show. And this first hour brought to you by TireRack.com, the official tire expert of the Dan Patrick Show. You can go to TireRack.com/Dan. Try the easy-to-use tire decision guide. See the full lineup of Goodyear tires, special offers, free road hazard protection, mobile tire installation, TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be. Play of the day, poll questions, stat of the day, as always, coming up. We'll talk to Peter King next hour, announced his retirement from his great football column. He'll join us coming up here in a little bit. Also, ESPN college basketball analyst, former college coach Seth Greenberg. We'll talk about court storming and what we can do to prevent, mitigate, eliminate. But the Duke center, Kyle Filipowski, no major injury. It turned out it was his knee, not his ankle. But you don't want to say it, but it's implied that it takes a serious injury, incident, accident for us to notice. If this had happened a while ago, let's say during the football season, how much coverage would it get? What if he was out for the rest of the season? How much coverage would that get? So it really depends on almost the timing of it and then the severity of it. If this is Saturday night, I don't know how much coverage it's going to get. If there's something else going on, if it was during All-Star weekend. So the timing of it, people need topics to talk about. And it's Duke. You're looking for things to talk about. What are we going to talk about? What do you get excited about? People are going to have opinions about this. And then I don't know if it goes away. And I said that yesterday. Is it a 24, 48-hour type story? Some stories have legs. You got the combine going on. Let's say Caleb Williams' camp comes out and says he doesn't want to play in Chicago. Say goodbye to this story. It's the timing of when the story comes out. It's almost like the evolution of telling a story, keeping a story front and center, and a story that goes away. The fact that it's not a serious injury, good for him, good for Duke, good for college basketball. But if it was, the impact that would have on Duke, where they're seeded in the tournament, and does that pave the way for somebody else to then move up in Duke's spot or win the ACC? But these are things that are happening with this story, and it's sort of there. I don't know if it goes anyplace until somebody, a commissioner, says something. I know that Bill Self, the Kansas coach, said, let's eliminate this. I know we keep saying, hey, let's eliminate this. Well, how are you going to do that? Can you discourage? Can we start with discouraging? I love the celebration. I understand the celebration. I think the tone of storming the court has changed recently. And it's more about, hey, look at me, and I'm going to put this on TikTok. Hey, I'm going to put this on Instagram. Hey, did you see me? I went up to that player. That's what I'm concerned about. And I'll still go back to what I said yesterday. Every school should have in place enough police, not security, police, to be able to escort a team off the floor. If you think that there is that possibility, Duke is coming to town, like, what would be court storming worthy? And this was a big game, but you should at least be prepared for that. So at least you can say to that opposing team and the coach, we're going to get you off the court, and you know, you won't be subjected to that. Or at least do your best to do that. That would be where I would start. Can you discourage? You know, I saw Arkansas. Arkansas had a court-storming victory, and they had a bunch of security people. They were holding a string. Not exactly barbed wire, you know, but a string. And at one point, one taller student just steps over the string. Like, that's not really preventing anybody. He might have stepped on it. But hey, here's it. I mean, I'm not saying you have, you know, like a dog collar and there's that canine fence or something, like, you know, can't, I mean, I would not rule it out, or barbed wire or whatever it might be, an electric fence here. But if you have the police, make sure the police know we are going to protect those players. And then everybody come on down on the court and jump around. Yes, Eden.
This string actually illustrates your point perfectly, because if you're storming the court, that string doesn't mean a damn thing. If you're quietly lining up because I think we're going to win, and when we do, we're all going to run onto the court, and this is going to be, oh, wait, there's a string. Oh, wait, we can't. There's a string there. So, and that's how you know the difference. If you're patiently lining up to, and now we're all going to run on, you didn't storm the court. You just ran on. You ran onto it because, oh, my God, we won.
But then if you are holding that string and you wait until the players get off the court, then you drop the string and then you say, oh, okay, everybody, no, come on.
Calmly come on out here and get your video come and then on. We'll just exit.
Come on.
This way.
Yes, everybody get your selfie and then, you know, please leave the building. Yes, Paulie?
I'm watching the end of the Duke-Arkansas game that you reference, and there are specifically guys in yellow jackets all around the student section. They're ready. They're in place. But they aren't physically doing anything. Once the masses start coming, you know, the security's not greenlit to hogtie these people. They're not going to put them in a headlock, not going to tackle them. It's basically, like you said, a discouragement that only worked for 10 or 12 seconds.
If you look at the security after the Wake Forest game, all of the security is surrounding the student body on the court. So they, I guess, I don't know what they're protecting them from, but they're all around them. They let them on the court.
You guys stay here on the court. All you guys right here. You're not allowed to leave now. Now you have to stay here.
You wanted to storm the court. Now you're going to stay here.
No, that's it. You guys all stay here.
Come on. Did we get the photo? We got the photo. Okay, now you guys can disperse. Yes, Paulie?
I think I have a solution. It seems to just happen against Duke. Maybe we should just have more security at the Duke away games. All the ones I found this season are someone doing it versus Duke.
Yeah, but you're going to have these conference tournaments, and everybody, it's your chance with your little conference, with your little school. And even if it's not a buzzer beater, you get to storm the court because your team is going to play in March Madness. So it's not just Duke. It's the moment of we get to run on the floor. And how many regular season games are storming the court worthy? But you know that we're going to have that coming up here. And we're all going to be watching it, and we're going to forget about this. Yes, Mark.
I think court storming worthy is basically Duke and whoever's a top five team.
Okay, but they were favored.
Yeah, but Wake Forest is like, we haven't seen them be this good.
Okay, but you've beat them before at Wake Forest. I think last year you beat them.
They don't think much of themselves. Because like Duke, Kansas, UConn, Kentucky, they're not storming the court.
No, but you were favored in the game. You had beaten Duke at Wake Forest last year. At some point, don't you say, you know what? We're supposed to beat them. We're good.
I don't think they think that.
Well, maybe not. Yes, Paul.
So you're enacting the act like you've been there before role.
Yes, yes.
I like that.
Okay. Yes.
Like, didn't Barry Sanders just drop the ball when he scored a touchdown?
Yeah.
Being cool. We got to make being cool cool again.
Yes. Yes,
Todd. We're the wrong guys to do it, by the way.
Maybe not.
Yeah. As we segue to Todd. Hey, Todd.
Hey, but maybe they factored in that Wake hadn't won at Duke since January 11th, 1997. So if you balance the two dates of a last year win at home and it's taking that many years to win at Duke, it's just a win over Duke, regardless of where they were playing.
Yeah.
You go crazy.
Okay. But even if you win at Duke, you're not going to have enough students to storm the floor at Duke. You're at home. You were favored, slight favored, and you won last year, I believe, against Duke at Wake Forest. Yeah, Pauling?
I checked. I got the schedule from last year. Last year, Wake Forest won 81-70 at home versus Duke. They handled them.
Did they storm the court then?
Checking.
Okay. All right.
If you win by double digits, you don't storm the court. It's got to be like a really tight game down to the last.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you, Todd. And we talked about this yesterday. When Duke beat Clemson in football this year, their fans stormed the field. Yes, Marvin.
So should Wake Forest storm the court ever? Is this more an indictment on Wake Forest, like their fans? Todd, what do you think?
I think any chance Wake Forest gets to celebrate something, go out there and do it. I don't care if there's a string there or there's a whole bunch of police with batons. Get out there.
All right. Thank you, Todd.
You're welcome.
Thank you. All right. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address, dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle at DP Show. And as I open up the phones yesterday, if you have a solution, and Jay Billis said, well, just arrest them. Good luck with that. He's saying, well, you just arrest everybody, and then everybody's going to learn if you storm the court, you're going to get arrested. Boy, I'd hate to be down at precinct when they start bringing people in, booking them. I mean, this is in Philadelphia where they actually had a prison under the stadium at the Vet. You know, come on in. You're going to stay. Put you in the cooler. So you're going to have, what, 1,000 people arrested? What, is it going to be trespassing? Yes, Todd.
Bunch of parents waiting to bail them out.
Yeah.
But Sally, with my sorority sister, said we can do that. Nothing would happen. We can go on the court.
Yes, Mara.
That docket's going to look crazy.
Yeah.
So we got trespassing. We have court storming. It's 89 court storming charges? Yes.
There's 75 guys named Tyler being booked tonight.
Yeah, Paul.
I've got the game last year. Wake took out Duke 81-70, and there was almost no reaction by the crowd. They didn't storm. They didn't do anything. There is security in front of the student section.
It looked like the freshman.
Yeah.
It's definitely the freshman class's fault.
Yeah.
Step it up.
They may have been in stunned disbelief.
Thank you, Todd.
Sometimes you're just frozen. We actually win, and you're just frozen in your seat.
Yeah.
I'll factor that in.
All right. I think we pretty much solved this. All good. What's poll question today, Seton?
Well, I guess we could go with court storming again. What will the NCAA do about court storming? And your choices here are measured reaction, overreaction, no reaction.
That's snarky.
I just don't know what they can do. Because now you're going to ask these schools that, okay, you need to have a larger police presence here. Are you going to tell your students, can you put something up on the scoreboard, Jumbotron? Hey, wait till the opposing basketball team leaves the court, and then you may politely join us at midcourt for a celebration. Like, you know, the public address announcer, I'd like to remind the student body, please wait till Duke leaves the court after getting their butt handed to them. Now, when I say storm, then you can storm. Ready, set, storm! Yes, Todd.
And then won't teams purposely slowly saunter off that loss, purposely making the celebration take that much longer?
I was joking.
No, but if they did do something, we had a call yesterday that said put some kind of timer up there and wait 15 seconds.
Yes.
I think if you just put, and I say it yesterday, but if you just put security around the court, it doesn't have to be police. It doesn't have to be, you know, police dogs and like a military threat of like, if you come out here, you are getting punished. You know what I mean? But if you just put people there, even in those goofy green jackets, most kids aren't going to run onto the court anymore unless something crazy happens and the court is truly stormed like it used to be. It's almost like taking back the good ones.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, Paulie.
So I can see a reaction from all the other conferences following suit to what the SEC does. The SEC has rules in place, and they upped them last year. $100,000, with his football, with court storming or running on the field. The second violation will be $250,000, and the third one will be $500,000. Now, the SEC did consider making schools forfeit a home game after a fan storming incident, but the conference decided against that penalty.
Yeah, they're not going to do
that. No, but it was discussed.
Yeah. Yes, Todd?
Just by having levels of fines shows that they have no control over it. Instead of having like one major thing, to have these little stages, if you do it the ninth time, then this is going to happen to you. So they're already putting that. What kind of sanctions is that when you know it's going to happen multiple times?
It doesn't matter to the fan. It will matter to the university. And do you, you know, instead of saying, hey, this is going to cost us $100,000, how about we spend some of that money to get a larger police presence to make sure. All I want is the opposing team off the floor. That's it. You want to storm the court. You want to take your health, you know, put it at risk. Go ahead. Yeah, I mean, fine. That's what we want to do, and everybody still loves these celebrations. Great. Just make sure the team gets off the floor. That's not asking a whole lot. Yeah, Mark.
we should just tell Wake Forest just to be better. And they won't have to worry about storming the court.
Well, they don't storm the court that often. Tim Duncan's not coming back. Yes, Paul.
I like what you said at the start of the show. If there wasn't this window of opening in sports, we'd talk about something else. We're one small hand-sized measurement at the combine from this story going away. If Bo Nix has short fingers, it's over, John.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I'm not accusing him of having small fingers, Oregon.
Yeah.
I would never.
No. All right. Let's settle on a poll question. Maybe we already have. We'll get to more phone calls. Everybody fired up over court storming. We've had incidents. I brought it up for a decade, more than a decade, that we need to do something to ensure the safety of the opposing team. That's it. If you want to let it happen, all I'm asking is let the players leave the floor, stay out there all you want. Get your moment on SportsCenter. And I was there. You know, I'm guilty as charged. You know, we glamorized running onto the court. Yes, Tom?
Whatever happened to needing a credential to get on the court? It used to be a special thing. You'd need a media credential, regardless of how the game ends up. You can't get anywhere near the court unless you're with TV, radio, or the newspaper.
Thank you, Tom. Well, this might be the most you've jumped
really
in.
It really has. Usually it's about 10:38, 12 or so before I say the first thing.
Yeah, but you're fired up over this.
Yeah, man, it's
and
Wake.
You were there at Wake.
It was. I took all kinds of pictures and videos, and I had no problem. Yeah. I don't want anyone to get hurt.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was the greatest thing.
Oh, you didn't want anybody to get hurt.
Did not want
it.
I just wanted to preface by saying I did not want anybody to get hurt, but I did think it was awesome seeing that. It was very cool to see that in person.
Okay. Yeah, Paul.
We're 2 days in, and I don't know where Todd stands on court storming. He does not want to see people to get hurt, but he loves when people run on the court.
Yeah, one warning and then the expulsion.
Okay.
Especially if my daughter happened to be on the court. You don't get expelled right away.
Yeah.
One or two times, hey, third time, we got to send you packing.
I like the Todd yesterday.
Two warnings. It just changed to two warnings, and on the third, you're
just
out.
In case you went out there twice, like, wait a second.
Yeah, Todd's daughter goes to Wake Forest, and then I said, well, what should we do? Well, we should kick him out of school.
You put me on the spot there
so
yesterday.
So if your daughter went out onto the court because her other friends are out there, and then she gets kicked out, and then you go, well, there should be a warning.
So. A little slap on the wrist. Let's not do that again. Someone could get hurt. Come on. You're better than that.
All righty. We're off to a rousing start here. That's a rousing start. Okay?
Was I supposed to say something like that?
No, I was
worried. I didn't have a clever line for that.
No, I was worried that you were going to. Okay. We're going to take a break. We'll get phone calls coming up.
Oh, like a rouser. Is that what you meant?
Yes.
There's some kind of Ronda Rousey rumble. I was lost there. I don't know what you're doing.
Take a break. We're back after this Dan Patrick Show.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it, I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I will get to more phone calls. People still fired up about court storming. He is the recently retired Football Morning in America columnist, Peter King. This will be the last time we'll ever have Peter on the show because there's no reason to have him on after this. He's not going to be doing anything. Not going to be relevant. He's going to be retired. Let's all say goodbye to Peter King.
Bye, Peter. Good run.
Very impressive.
I look forward to a life of irrelevance.
Yeah. Let me tell you. Yeah. Hey, welcome to my world. All righty. A couple of things here. By the way, you have a Wake Forest jacket on. Are you pro court storming? Is that why you're wearing this?
I detest court storming.
Okay. Okay.
It's idiotic. It shouldn't happen. And I've thought that even before this guy got hurt from Duke. It's bad. It's dangerous. It's just a dumb idea, and they got to do something about it.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to figure out. What is it that they can do that's going to prevent this? Whereas when you have professional sports, we encourage the security guy to knock the guy to the ground when he runs onto the baseball field or football field. Here, you're kind of saying, go on down there and have a little bit of fun. But the game, they're not interrupting the game. This is after the game. And my solution is just ensure that you have police presence and you get the opposing team off the court. Like, that's what their job is. Make sure you corral them, get everybody to the locker room, and then if the students want to come on the floor, fine. But get the opposing team off the floor safely.
From here on out, what I would do if I were a coach, I would simply say that, you know, especially if my program is a big program like Duke, I would simply say at each game I have, I want 8 security officers there after the game. And I want them to create a little funnel after the game. And that funnel leads to the tunnel that lets people go out of a place peacefully. Because quite honestly, I don't trust schools, even if they ban court storming, I don't trust them to, to make the court storm proof. But anyway, what do I know? I just saw this and I just said, who allows this idiotic stuff to happen? Where is the NCAA? But I've said that about the NCAA for the last 3 or 4 years. It is an idiotic, useless organization.
You sound like a retired guy.
Oh, I'm yelling at the clouds. I'm Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino. How in the world can the head coach at UCLA go to become the offensive coordinator at a school in the same conference? What is wrong with this picture? I'll tell you what's wrong with this picture. You know, the Pac-12 should be the Pac-12. The idiots who put the Pac-12 in the Big Ten are idiots. They just are. Do you realize that the minor sports, and I hate to call them the minor sports, the non-revenue sports, how would you like to be on the pick a team? The UCLA men's soccer team, and have a road trip to State College, Pennsylvania, or you name it, and you play one game, and then you get back on a plane and you fly back to Los Angeles. I know some of them are going to do 2 games and all that stuff, but even 2 games, you're flying 3,000 miles to play 2 soccer games or 2 softball games or maybe even 1, and then you go back home. A bunch of idiots.
It's just money. It's just greed, Pete. That's all this is. Look at Big East basketball, the best conference ever. And what happened? Football greed ruined the best basketball conference in America. That's all it is. That's the bottom line. Speaking of the NCAA, I have an idea.
Yeah.
Looking at these running backs, they're all available. You know, they're going to get franchise tag. Anybody getting a contract here? What if we said that we're going to give exemptions to running backs after their sophomore year that they could leave college if they wanted to go to the NFL?
Well, then I'm sure what you would do is you would get maybe not a union, but some sort of organized effort for the left tackles to say, well, why do we have to stay 3 years? Well, I understand why you're saying that, Dan, because there's only so much tread on a tire for a running back.
Yeah.
But, and again, I don't mean to sound callous, but running backs, unfortunately, in the way the game is today, are simply not as important as they were 20 years ago. You know, 20 years ago, a running back had just as much of a chance before the season of winning the MVP. Look at the years that Adrian Peterson and LaDainian Tomlinson and Sean Alexander had. You know, so it's just the way the game goes. And, of course, you know, you feel sorry for Saquon Barkley that he makes 1/4 of what Daniel Jones makes. It's stupid. Unfortunately, that's just the economics of the game.
What was your first year covering the NFL?
I covered the Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer in 1984, and I actually picked up rookie quarterback Boomer Esiason at the airport the day he got drafted. And he had a teammate named Pete Koch, who was also drafted, who was a defensive end, 6'5", 290. And so I had a 2-door Volkswagen Rabbit. And I went to say, hey, I'm picking you up. And they looked around saying, a media guy is picking us up from the airport? I conveniently hid them from the guy in the limo that was sent to pick them up from the Bengals. And so we went to the parking lot. We get in the car. And Boomer Esiason, who was already pissed off about being picked in the middle of the second round, he looks at the car, realizes he's going to have to squeeze into the back seat, and he goes, "Welcome to the effing NFL."
And he's had a chip on his shoulder ever since then.
Yes, he has, and he still does. That's right.
Okay, so all the years you covered the NFL, if I said you can have the answer to one story, one question, what's the one question or one story that you want an answer to that you didn't get?
I would really want to know why Bill Belichick felt the need to videotape sidelines when he already was the most brilliant defensive coach maybe of all time. That will always confuse me. It's like when Robert Kraft asked him, and this was in this documentary, he said it many times. When I asked him how much of an advantage it gave him, Belichick said 1%, and Kraft said to him, "Well, you're a schmuck." I mean, it's just, I realize you try to get every edge, but when the league tells you the previous year you can't do this because they know you've been doing it, and then you do it again the first year at your arch rivals, where Eric Mangini is coaching the team. I mean, Bill Belichick is a lot smarter than I ever will be about many things in life. He wasn't very smart that year.
Yeah. Trying to figure out, though, Bill's next move. Is there a chance in your mind that he has coached his final NFL game?
I guess there is, because how in the world could there be seven openings other than New England, and he gets one formal interview? Now, he probably got a couple of phone calls. "Hey, what do you think? Is it worthwhile for us to talk?" Whatever. But, I mean, I keep wondering. You're Josh Harris. You just paid $6 billion for this football team. Explain to me why you wouldn't sit in a room with Bill Belichick for a day or for 6 hours.
Yeah.
At the very least, to simply download his brain. I will never understand why Washington did not interview Bill Belichick.
Talking to Peter King, the recently retired Peter King. The Chicago Bears, not a report, but you kind of sent something out there that caught my attention, where you go, "I could see the Bears. The wind is blowing that it looks like they'll trade that number one pick. These are scenarios that could happen." How much research is in there, Pete?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
You didn't speak to anybody.
I spoke to nobody. I haven't talked to anybody. Like, Dan, a year ago at this time, I just read. I read what's out there. A year ago at this time, I sat in a room for 45 minutes with Ryan Poles at the scouting combine at the Hyatt in Indianapolis. His next appointment was Scott Fitterer, the general manager of the Carolina Panthers. And this is what Ryan Poles is going to do this week. And I just believe, if I am Ryan Poles, you know what I have on my team? I have a B quarterback with about 10 significant holes. I probably, in the next two drafts, could take the first pick in this draft and turn it into, along with my other picks, a total of maybe 8 picks in the top two rounds in the next two drafts. I could do that. Why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you build a great team around a B quarterback instead of drafting a quarterback who might be an A quarterback, but it's the hardest thing to project in all of sports. What quarterback when you draft is going to be great? Look at the misses over the years. So in my opinion, if your locker room loves Justin Fields, if you know that you can surround Justin Fields with a supporting cast the way Brett Veach and Andy Reid have surrounded Patrick Mahomes with a supporting cast, to me, it's not a very difficult decision. But I don't know what they're going to do, Dan. I put that in basically because you just keep hearing things about this. And I just believe that the smartest thing for them is to trade the pick.
Now that you're retired, what are you going to do Sunday night after all the games?
Go to sleep happily. And I probably won't make it to the end of the Sunday night game, which will be a happy moment for me, because one of the reasons I wanted to retire before the scouting combine is that I used to love going to the scouting combine 5, 6, 8 years ago. You're up to 1:30 every night, but you're also spending 45 minutes with Sean McVay or with whoever, you know, with all these, well, not Sean McVay anymore. He doesn't go to the scouting combine, but all these coaches you see out, hey, how you doing? What's going on? You just sit with them and you talk to them about whatever. And that is great. But I've gotten to the point of my life. I knew one of the reasons it's time to go is that I have no desire to stay up to 1:30 in the morning anymore to do anything. Sorry. That's just the way it goes when you're 66. So that's one of the reasons that I knew it was time to go.
All right. Before I let you go, can you help me with this campaign crusade to get Brent Musburger into the Hall of Fame?
Well, Dan, I saw that a few weeks ago. I'd be happy, and I believe absolutely unequivocally, the Hall of Fame voters have nothing to do with the people that are selected for the Rune Arledge Award, which is, you know, the TV award.
The Pete Rozelle Award.
The Pete Rozelle Award, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but you know those people, so
I have said on many occasions this guy should be in, that guy should be in. But okay. Dan, I'm not involved in any way other than to say, man, you ought to look at Musburger, you ought to look at this guy.
Yeah, but you don't have a job now, Pete. I'm giving you a job.
Dan, with all due respect, and I love Brent Musburger, there are a lot of things in my life that I could get on a crusade about.
Okay.
That's not the one that is number one on my list. However, I absolutely categorically think that Brent Musburger, who is on the Mount Rushmore of, you know, the TV influencers in the history of the NFL, it's insane he doesn't have that award.
Well, congrats on the decision. And,
all right, Dan. Hey, thank you. Good to be with you always. And listen, I'm going to be scratching and clawing to get on your show when I'm feeling particularly lonely next October. So just make sure that Todd Fritz has an excuse built in. Oh, Peter, we're booked for the next 8 months. We got nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Hey, take care, guys.
Thank you, Peter.
All right. See you later.
That's Peter King. Football Night in America, also Football Morning in America columnist, and did it for a long, long time. That'll take years off of you. You know what? He did it too well. Like, he set a standard, and then you have to live up to that standard. When you do a long-form column and all the stuff that he would put in there, you know, it was must-reading. Every Monday that you would get that, and there was always something that you could take out of there. There was a quote in there. There was a story in there. There was, you know, a rumor in there. There was always something. And I'll go back to the Boston Globe when you had Peter Gammons and you had Will McDonough covered the NFL. Who was it? Peter May covered the NBA maybe for them. But the Sunday Boston Globe was must read because there were every Peter Gammons had his baseball page. There was a football page, a basketball page, and it was as good a sports department as anybody has ever assembled. And I was fortunate to grow up with that. I would go out and get the Boston Globe when I was in New York, even when I was in Ohio. I wanted to read the Boston Globe because it had so much information in there. And those kind of columnists, well, newspapers, they're dying. You know, what we ask of a columnist is different now. But Peter, old school, and 27 years of doing that. Yeah, Peter, or Paulie.
A long time ago, back when we were at ESPN, you had a day off. And we, Fritzy and I, and you as well, were discussing fill-in hosts. And we decided to ask Peter King. And he got back to us. He goes, I'd love to. I've never hosted a radio show in my life before. I'd love to. And we did it at the ESPN Zone in New York City.
Yeah.
And Peter is prepped. I mean, he knows football like the back of his hand. He walked in. He did 3 hours in your spot. And we had guests. We had everything ready for him. He got done. He looked like he just left a sauna. He goes, I'm never doing that again. We're like, what? You didn't have fun? He goes, I had a blast. He goes, that was a lot different than what I was expecting. And he wrote about it in his Monday morning quarterback column.
Yes.
And it was fascinating. He said, he goes, I had no idea how to pace yourself in a three-hour format. And it was great radio, but he was like a wet sponge when he's done.
But that's why I wanted to have you guys here later on in my career, that I could take a break. You guys might have something to say. And then it allowed me, plus I didn't want to just hear my voice, but, you know, these singular hosts, it's tough to do that for 3 hours, and it's live, and the energy that it takes. And I realized that a while ago, like, hey, you guys can help me with the heavy lifting here. Plus, it's more content as well. But, you know, you have singular host, and, you know, you rely on your callers or, you know, people who have writers on their staff to help you with, you know, certain segments there. But, you know, Pete's not the first to say that and won't be the last to do that when you're in there and you go, because everybody says the same thing. I could do that. You just sit around for 3 hours. You just talk. Yeah. And then after about 17 minutes, they go, I don't know what else I'm going to talk about. Yes, Paulie.
The first time we had Mike Florio in studio, it was a similar situation. He'd been a guest on many radio shows. He had never hosted. He, to his credit, over-prepared for the show. He tried to write out the segments, and it looked like the movie Seven, The Notebooks. He had thousands of words written down, and he did a very good job. But he even said, he goes, I was over-prepared. I had too many notes. I should have just relaxed.
It's one thing to be a guest.
And now he's cruising on his show.
Yes, he is. But it took him a long time to understand it. There's a flow to it, a cadence to it. And to make it sound easy, look easy, that's part of the job of being a sportscaster. That's why everybody wants to do it. It's like, I could do that. I'd like to do that. I'd like to be on SportsCenter. Yeah, okay. Let me know. 11 o'clock, it's live, and all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, where's the highlight? Prompter's down. All the fun things that go along in this business. All right, I got more phone calls coming up. And we'll take a break. We're back after this. Dan Patrick Show.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Watched a little bit of North Carolina and Miami on the mothership last night. RJ Davis had 21 in each half. And if you total that up, Todd, that's 42 points that he had last night.
Nice job.
That set the single-game record in the Dean Smith Center. Who do you think held the previous scoring mark for North Carolina at home? Marvin, I'm going to start with you.
Phil Ford.
Paulie, I'm going to go to you.
Oh, man. Jerry Stackhouse.
Todd.
James Worthy.
That was my guess, was James Worthy.
Oh. It's the obvious answer. The guy who might be the all-time leading scorer in ACC history.
Ed Cota?
Tyler Hansbrough Jr. III.
Wow.
Had 40.
Psycho T.
Yes. Woo! Here's Darius Rucker.
Stat of the day, stat of the day. Here comes the stat of the day. Hey, stat of the day, stat of the day. Here comes the stat of the day.
Stat of the Day brought to you by Panini America, the official trading cards of the Dan Patrick Show. He's Seth Greenberg, former college coach, now an analyst at the Mothership. He joins us on the program. Seth, the immediate reaction you had when you saw the end of the Wake-Duke game?
Immediate reaction was a lack of planning by Wake Forest. The administration did not have a plan in place to make sure that the officials and the players got off in a safe manner. And it is real simple. When you look at the video, Dan, look at the number of fluorescent jackets or the lack of number of fluorescent jackets or security that surrounded. Look, you were favored in the game. You were favored in the game. You were favored by 2 points. There's a good chance you're going to win the basketball game. Wake Forest is a really good team. And it really bothers me because it takes away from the win that Wake Forest had. It was a program win. It was a win that's going to get them in the NCAA tournament. They have maybe as good a starting five as any team in the ACC. Yet all we've done the last 2 days is talk about the court storm. But a lack of planning. You might have said you had a plan, but, you know, the plan you had was ineffective. You know at Wake Forest, the students sit at both ends. right? Steve Forbes called a timeout with like 2 seconds left. I'm thinking in my mind is watching it because we had the same situation when I was at Virginia Tech when we played Duke. I'm thinking in my mind as I'm watching that here come the fluorescent jackets and they're going to create a tunnel and they're going to help these guys get off the court. No jackets. I'm sitting there watching it going, uh-oh, we got a problem here. Buzzer goes off. It was a fast-developing court storm coming from both ends. The players had no chance, really. And to me, it was just a lack of planning and embarrassing for the league, embarrassing for Wake Forest. And I'm a John Curry fan, but I just think they made a huge mistake. And thank goodness it didn't end up worse because Kyle Filipowski, whether it's knee or his ankle or whatever happened to him, here's my deal. And we talked about this morning on Get Up. So say he gets pushed, all right, and someone pushes him and he falls in. As he's coming down, he pushes someone back. Who's the villain?
He is.
He is. Mm. No win. It's a no-win situation. So there's got to be a plan. We got to have a solution. Like, agility is part of any business. You know, in your business, what you do, you've shown agility. You change with the times. You recreate certain parts of what you're doing, how you're doing, and why you're doing it. In coaching, agility, you see the game has changed. The use of the three-point rule, freedom of movement, there's greater flow, inverting your offense, having a big skin handle the ball. So when it comes to court storming, I used to love court storm, Dan. We've got to have agility. We've got to have some solutions. Maybe we don't have to eliminate it, but we've got to have agility to make sure the officials and the players can get off the court safely.
Yeah. That's what I keep saying. Just ensure that you have a police presence, that their job is to get the opposing team off the floor and get the officials off the floor, and then have at it if you want to. And we're going to see this, and look, ESPN has glamorized this for decades. These conference tournaments, everybody wants to make SportsCenter, and they're going to do this. I'm worried about the tone of court storming. Like, the tone of it now has changed. It's, here's a video watching me. You're not necessarily watching what's in front of you. It's like, I'm going to do a TikTok video. Yes, that to me is even more of a concern. If you want to be on the floor, I don't want to be the old guy, get off my lawn. But I also think you have to ensure the protection of those student athletes and the officials. That is paramount. How many police officers it takes? Not security. I want police officers there to make sure that they get off the floor. Wake beat Duke last year at Wake. They didn't storm the court. So, like, why now?
It's a rite of passage. I think these students think, like you said, it's their moment. They're not in the moment. They're basically creating the moment by using their phones and documenting it instead of being organic and spontaneous.
Yeah.
Now it's almost a rite of passage. And the other thing is society in general, Dan, and I really believe this, there's a lack of respect for others. So those kids are running on the court. They don't give a crap about who's in front of them. And if they have a chance to have that viral moment, maybe they can push Kyle Filipowski down or bump into him, and they can turn around and go, hey, see what I did to Filipowski? See what I did to Mark Mitchell? There's a lack of respect, not just in court storming, but just in society. And let's face it, everything that happens in life, it trickles down. I mean, it doesn't just stay in one certain area. And because of that lack of respect, I think that it's become increasingly dangerous. So I my plan is real simple. Game's over. All right. And like, first of all, the students, if they're going to get their student tickets, they have to sign a contract. And there's going to be consequence about abiding by the rules in relation to end of games, entering the court storm, however you want to write it. They have to sign a contract. It's a binding contract with the university. But game ends 30 seconds, 45 seconds, a minute, whatever it is. You put it on the clock. All right. The storm can't start until the horn goes off. Play the alma mater. At Virginia Tech, we say play Enter the Sandman, whatever it is. People are still hyped. You get those people off the court safely, boom, let's go. And you're still going to have that same moment. You're still going to have that same experience. Or have the players, this is like what I call inverted court storm. Game's over. People leave the court safely. Players and coaches go into the stands and celebrate with the students jumping up and down, music's blaring, taking pictures. People get a chance to high-five the players and do what they want. You got to have agility. you got to have agility in the world today. And I think we're not showing, you know, it's not either black or white. We can find somewhere in the middle where it's safe for all parties.
We're lucky in some ways, Seth, that this happened at a quiet time in the world of sports. There's no NFL. Combine's just getting started in a couple of days. Like, there's a lull in the action. The NBA is starting after the All-Star break. So we will focus on this. But my concern is, how long do we focus on that? You've been talking about this for years.
Yeah.
Nothing's happened. And I don't know if anything's going to happen here. It's just
the commissioners are involved, though, now. And, like, it's not an NCAA issue, Dan. Okay. Like, everyone, it's easy. We call NCAA. No, it's not an NCAA. This is done in the athletic departments. It's done at the commissioner's level. Who do the commissioners work for? They work for the presidents. So there's a conference call allegedly today or tomorrow with all the commissioners. And you know what? I don't know if it's going to work across the board, but for the Power Five conferences, there needs to be some type of protocol in place. And, you know, again, come up with a solution. But everyone wants to blame everything on the NCAA. Everything isn't it. Like, you know, hey, it's sunny outside. Good job, NCAA. Crap, it's snowing outside. God damn it, the NCAA, they can't control the weather. It can't be, you know, it can't be everything. And my dad, I love Billis. I love him to death. My daughter works for his law firm. But, you know, like, everything can't be their fault.
I agree. I know. It's easy to use them as a scapegoat. Let me hit you with this one before I say goodbye. If Caitlin Clark surpasses Pete Maravich on the all-time scoring list, should she be viewed as the all-time leading scorer in college basketball history?
She should be viewed as the all-time leading scorer in college basketball history from the point of four-year players. Because you can't. Pistol Pete did it in 3 years. So I think you got to categorize them a little bit. And Pistol Pete didn't have a three-point line. And Caitlin Clark's phenomenal. I love her passing. I love her feel. I love her vision. I love her size. She can see over the defense. I love everything about her. And I love that her teammates celebrate with her. Like, it's not they celebrate her and they celebrate with her. You can see they have a great connection and trust and respect for what she's done and how she's included them in it. But what Pistol Pete did with no three-point line in 3 years, I think you got to have a separate category for that. But I think we've got to celebrate the incredible accomplishment that she had. Because if Pistol Pete played 4 years, I mean, that record probably would never been broken.
No, nobody's touching that. But I've told this story on the air before. Dale Brown knew that I was a Maravich fan. He sent me actual game footage that LSU had. But he also sent me the shot chart for Maravich, and said that he went back and said, just based off the shots he was taking, without knowing that that would be where the three-point shot would be, he would average 55 a game.
So, oh, yeah.
So if you're averaging 55 a game and you're doing that, and he averaged 44 a game for 3 years, and, you know, granted, helped did his dad let him, you know, shoot all the time. But still, that I tell the audience that the pressure of having to go out and score, like Iverson, every single night. You know, Jordan, Kobe, every single night. Just the energy. Caitlin Clark, every single night. The energy it takes. Because you can't have an off night. If you do, your team loses. They are dependent on you to get shots up. And I always found that it was underrated. People thought, man, it must be nice to shoot all the time. Everybody knows you're shooting. You got to shoot.
And you're the focal point of the other teams. Here's the amazing thing is getting that many shots. You're the focal point. You're sitting in your locker room before the game. You're playing Caitlin Clark. All right, when Caitlin Clark comes off the screen, we're trapping her. We're going to deny her the ball back. You know, we're going to match up with her in transition. You know, we're going to defend her with a bigger player. Whatever it is, she's the focal point of everything you do when you prepare for Iowa, just like Kobe was, just like Maravich was, just like Iverson was. Less like West. Well, I mean, West had a little company with Elgin Baylor, but you know, as you go back. But I mean, like, to me, that's the incredible thing. Like, they're saying we're stopping Dan Patrick, and she's saying, "And I think I'll drop 40 tonight."
Yeah, that's what's amazing. When they set out to stop you,
yeah,
like Toronto set out to stop Kobe when he scored 81.
So it was not a good plan.
Great to talk to you, Seth.
Thanks. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
All right, buddy. That's Seth Greenberg, former college coach, now at the mothership there. Brian in Virginia. Hi, Brian. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Dan. Thanks for taking the call again. Two quick things. First thing, I really appreciate your guys' suggestions for Dublin a couple months ago. My wife and I did not get to meet Lionel Messi, unfortunately, of bartending, but we did have the Red Breast, and that was definitely in the top five whiskeys I've ever had. So I appreciate all the suggestions from the guys. Another thing, today for me, the best story from yesterday, to take something negative from my Toronto Raptors, was that pizza party that they got for three in a row yesterday. I feel like if anyone's going to storm the court, it should have been the players, but maybe take, you know, a suggestion and calmly walk on for that pizza party.
Yeah, the Raptors coach promised his players a pizza party if they strung together a three-game winning streak. And they did. Ended up beating the Pacers. So that's their longest winning streak of the season. And the players responded by chanting, "Pizza! Pizza!" I like it. A little pizza party. You're never too old for a pizza party. Yeah, you're too old for Chuck E. Cheese, but you're never too old for a pizza party. Yeah, Paul.
Never underestimate a free meal as an incentive. I mean, this show is based upon
that. That's true. Yeah. That's why we have Meat Friday. If you guys are good Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, then we'll have a Meat Friday. Yeah.